All right, this week we are joined by a very special guest, Wilfred LaSalle, producer, director, screenwriter, actor. I got a big upcoming feature film, award-winning director, I should have added, with the Hilo series, which we'll talk about. But also here to talk about a movie that he says has influenced him as a filmmaker, and a film that has become a sort of a cult classic over the years, to me, was very 80s. A lot of themes of redemption, even revenge, but also possibly some subtle, personal tragedy in there on both sides of the ring, if you will. And then a lot of themes that are very relevant to the time, as far as the Cold War and those kind of things. And I, of course, am talking about Rocky IV. So it's a film that we haven't done any Rocky movies on the pod yet, Zach, so this is our first one, and we are very honored to have you, and we're very excited to talk about it.
But is Rocky IV good?
You know, we're here to find that out.
We're going to figure that out.
It'll be determined today if Rocky IV is good or not. Let's do it.
But is it good podcast? Yeah, 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 yeah.
All right, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to the podcast, man. We're so honored that you reached out. We're happy to have you.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me as a guest.
Yeah, and you are in New York, right?
Yes.
The Bronx, right?
I'm born and raised in the Bronx, but I reside in Westchester County.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love New York. I've been to the Bronx one time. I went to a Yankees game.
Okay.
But whenever I've been, me and my wife go almost every year, we usually go to Manhattan, and we absolutely love it.
Yeah, it's not.
Are you a Yankees fan? Like,
absolutely.
Okay. As long as you're not a Mets fan.
No.
You're a Mets fan.
Yeah.
No. We would probably be like, hey, I don't know if this is going to work.
No, my best friend, he's a Mets fan. He loves the Mets. So.
Well, I'm so sorry for you.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Tough
I'm
for him.
I'm sorry for
right?
him, too, actually, because we're Braves fans. I was at, I laughed 2 years ago. I was at the game where the Braves passed the Mets for first place, like the last game of the regular season, something like that. So, yeah, we hate the Mets. But I'm sure your friend's a great guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He loves.
Well, cool. Real quick, off the top, just get out of the way. Please like and subscribe. We're happy to be doing this, and wherever we'll do this again later. But wherever you get your podcasts and socials, that kind of stuff, please follow us. But on to you, Will. So tell us briefly, because I know you have your award-winning director, and I think you had best film at I want to say it was Madras, right?
Yeah, Madras.
Madras Festival.
Yep.
So you have a lot going on. You're totally independent, correct?
Totally independent.
I was reading one article just this morning about your guerrilla style of filmmaking. So just tell us, however briefly, however long you want to talk about it, kind of how you got here.
So back in 2019, I was at the gym, and I kind of like had these visions coming through. I was listening to some music in my headphones, and the visions started coming to me. I left the gym. And immediately went home and started writing the film Hilo, which was a short film, my very first short film. No acting experience. Certainly didn't go to any of these fancy film schools. Made the first Hilo. Took me 2 days to shoot it. And then it was edited. It was done. It was released in February of 2020. And then it just kind of snowballed. Then Hilo 2 came. Then it was another film called Graves. Then Hilo 3. And now my new film, Oculus. That's coming out April 2024.
That's awesome. And Oculus is your first feature length, right? It's a full feature length?
Oh, no. My first feature length was Graves.
Oh, okay. Okay. Gotcha.
So I have five films. Hilo, yeah. Hilo 2, they're shorts. Hilo's 10 minutes and 44 mm-hmm. seconds. Hilo 2 is about 32 minutes. Graves was an hour and 27 minutes. Hilo 3 is an hour and 35. And Oculus is actually going to be our longest running film, which is just at 2 hours. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you.
How's the, briefly, because I know that we've got a movie to jump into, but how's it been? So I've been on set for a handful of things, nothing even longer than, 15 minutes. I've been on set for a day or so, I've worked in small things. But filming Oculus or Graves, what was that transition like going from a 10-minute film, 2-day shoot, to the extensive feature length?
It was challenging. It was very, very difficult, but very stressful. A lot of people don't understand when you work in the film industry and you wear many hats like I do, you take on a lot of responsibility. So a lot of that responsibility has to be delegated. And to alleviate the stress, that's what I do. The cast members who are in the film, if they're not filming a particular scene, they're helping me out on set. They're doing the boom mic. They're doing script supervisor, anything and everything to help us out. You know, we really are a family. But it is stressful. The editing process, I think, is what takes the longest time, if you ask me. I mean, that, because I'm such a perfectionist, that takes about 6 months. So we're filming for about 6 to 8 months only on weekends, and then I'm editing for another 6 to 7 months. So there goes my vacations, and there goes everything else. It really is a big sacrifice, and people don't see that. They see like the finished product, like, oh, this is great, I want to do this. And then they don't realize they're on set for 16, 17 hours eating donuts and pizza or whatever you can get your hands on.
Oh yeah, it is a full-time job.
Oh yeah.
You know, I always laugh. I'm sorry, I know that I ramble. I always laugh because whenever I see anything, so like on the Oculus trailer, there was a scene where the guy's eyes went white, mm-hmm. you know, and he's moving. And I was like, people don't realize that every single frame of this mm-hmm. has to be tracked,
rotoscoped,
has to be edited.
Oh, yeah.
Every single frame, yeah. Not just the motion, but every single frame. That's awesome. And it's cool that, you know, everybody kind of has to wear those multiple hats. You know, you have the, hey, you've done your scene, cut. All right, now hold the boom. Let's get to work.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's super cool.
Thank you.
Zach did some extra work. He's been on some sets. He was in, you were cut from Rampage.
Yeah.
But you were in Blockers.
Oh, wow.
And a couple of like other things too.
It's in a movie called Blockers. And then I was in The Darkest Minds in the background. So just on set, but yeah, long days, 16 hours.
Yeah.
Night shoots were the worst. Because you gotta, I mean, the whole time the sun's down, you're shooting. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, but
yeah,
I think night shoots are definitely challenging. Definitely, we shot a night scene in Graves, and that was, we broke like two lights.
Yeah,
it was insane. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But like that's if you plan a shoot and it goes as you planned, I would be worried because
nothing ever goes as planned ever.
That doesn't ever happen.
Never happened.
That means you didn't find what went wrong.
Yeah, right. Something's messed up. I wrote and produced and directed a short film in college when like it was my final project. And I say college, but I went to school later, so I was like 26, 27. And I hated producing it because it was so much. And this was like just a bunch of college kids. But some of my favorite things that happened on that shoot, I didn't plan for, didn't script. It just was like, we're on set there. I said, oh, this is a cool idea. And so that's awesome. You know, there's stories now of like, I want to say it was like Iron Man, where like they were writing the script like on set, you know? So those kind of going in, I feel like going in open to like what kind of comes out of it is how a lot of the greatest films are made.
Absolutely. Without a doubt. That's happened to me so many times on set. Like there's a particular scene in Graves. And I don't want to curse, but the main villain is called Salvi.
It's
you can
totally,
curse all you want.
It's okay. Fine.
So if you see Graves, there's a trailer for Graves, and the main villain is mm-hmm. Salvatore Marcello. His name is Salvi, and he's played mm-hmm. by one of my actors, Charles Alonso. So we're on set. We're at a bar. We're at my fiance's father's bar. He owns a bar here in Woodlawn in the Bronx. And we were filming there during, I think it was like right after COVID and whatever it was. And we were talking in between scenes. I had them actually drinking real alcohol. And everyone was like, are you crazy? You should give them apple juice. I'm like, no. It's a LaSalle production. They're going to drink for real.
Yeah.
So they drank.
Yeah.
And in between the sets, like this wasn't on script, wasn't on paper. I heard Charles say in the middle, he's like, yeah, you know, I drink, I kill. And I'm like, wait, what did you just say? He's like, no, I didn't mean to curse. And we used that line and it became iconic. If you watch Graves and if you see the trailer, it's hysterical because people who watch the film are like, oh my God, this guy's he's so nuts. And when he says it, he tells his younger brother, Paulo, he's like, Paulo, he goes, I drink, I fuck, and I kill. And it was just great. It was just one of those funny things. It just naturally came out, and we kept it.
Yeah, there's some movie, one last thing, and then we can, you know, get going. There's some movie, I can't remember what it's called, but it has, oh gosh, what's his name? He's in Armageddon.
Bruce Willis?
You know, no, it's not Bruce Willis. I know him. It's... You know the meme where the guy's like, hello, fellow kids. What's his name?
Steve Buscemi?
Yes, him. It has him in it. It's like he's much younger, and they're trying to shoot a scene, and they've done like 100 takes, and everything just keeps going wrong. And then when they're like not rolling, the actor like gets upset, and like they do the line, and he's like actually upset about something, and it's perfect, and then they miss it, but it's like all the stuff that's not planned. Right. That's awesome. That's super cool. And we'll dive more into that stuff as we go, because I definitely want to talk about, you know, like best it was best debut director, correct?
It
wasn't just best director. So,
it was best debut director, yeah.
That's awesome. And that's like, that was in Italy, Vesuvius?
Yeah, Vesuvius International Film Festival, yeah.
That's crazy, man.
That's awesome.
What was that like? Like, because you said you didn't go to film school. You never acted.
Nope.
And you started like in your 30s, right?
Started late. Started I was 30, I'm going to say 35, 34.
Okay.
Started, you know, that's a late start for me. I mean, it was incredible, you know, to see what you have on in your mind, you know, you write down, you actually create these characters and you actually bring them to life. That alone in itself is like the best experience you can possibly have as a creator, as a film director, and as a content creator. And to be acknowledged for that was big. You know, Halo 2 was a big film for me because it was the first film I ever got on Prime. I didn't even know how to get on Prime.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was the first film.
I actually knew that. I heard that in one of the links you sent. And that's crazy, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. And then, you know, it was incredible. You know, it's a lot of work, but it's very rewarding to me. You know, a lot of my time is taken, you know, making these films. But to me, I want to be immortalized in my films. Like, I want to always say to myself, like Patrick Swayze died, for instance, right? But if you want to watch a film with Patrick Swayze, you can always watch him in his prime. Yeah. His age is forever captured in those moments. And I feel like that's the essence of film for me. That's what I love the most about it.
Yeah, that reminds me. I just recently, so whenever me and my wife are just want to have something on that, you know, just after we watched Harry Potter, because we, you know, grew up with those, and we watched the like reunion thing on Max, and the guy who plays Hagrid, I can't think of his name, he actually passed away like a year or two ago. He says that he was like, this will be watched, you know, when my grandkids have grandkids, and he was like, I'll be gone, but Hagrid will still be here.
Right.
So that's super cool. Okay, well, we can do this all day, and we'll bring it back up. But we have a movie to talk about, a movie that you recommended. You said it was very influential for you, and that's Rocky IV. So I have a confession before we even get out of the gate, because this will be the non-spoiler section, even though it's like 40 years old. In case you haven't seen Rocky IV, because I actually had never seen Rocky IV.
Really?
I have actually I've only seen Rocky I, and I'm not even sure if I've seen the whole thing. But it's one of those things that, like, it was like The Sixth Sense, where I was like, I know this already. You know what I mean? Like, it's so immersed in the culture. But I know I haven't seen Rocky II. I know I haven't seen Rocky III. And I never seen Rocky IV. But I knew a lot more than I thought I did, because I know Drago. I know kind of the story. So I would love to hear. You can go first. Will, you know, and, you know, briefly, I know it's hard to say no spoilers for a movie that's this old and this famous, but it can be like your first reaction when you first saw it, or just what it means to you now.
Man, I've watched that movie about 200 times, and I've watched all the Rockies. Like, I'm a fan of all of them. I can tell you what they're all about, and I've watched them from one to all the Creeds.
Yeah, okay, so now it's like, I think nine, technically.
Yeah, so it's Rocky, Rocky, Rocky 2, Rocky 3, Rocky 4, Rocky 5, Rocky Balboa was Rocky 6, and then you had the Creeds. You had Creed 1, Creed 2, Creed 3. But I love this film. You know what it was for me? I think it was the story of the underdog for me. That was like what really resonated with me to see. And then the soundtrack was just something that, to this day, to me, is so iconic. Music is very important in a film, as you guys know. The difference, I forgot what actor it was, but he said the difference between action and comedy is the music you use. And that can really make an audience feel immersed and connected to what's happening. So for me, I love the movie. I was obsessed with it. I was obsessed with Stallone's story. You know, story was very, I don't know if you know his story, it was very motivating to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know,
he's very down to earth. I saw his documentary Sly. Love that. So I've always been a big Stallone fan. But for me, it was what was great about Rocky IV for me was the fact that he went to Russia to train. He grew the beard. And the scene with his wife was the most, I you know, I'm going to sound a little crazy, but I was a little emotional when I saw that scene when she tells him, you can't win. And he said, Adrian, this is what you married.
On the stairs.
Right.
On the stairs.
That to me. And then he goes into the car and he, you know, No Easy Way Out plays. And I'm just like, oh man, this is it, man. He's having the flashbacks with the boss sweater. I was just like, you know, I was like, oh man, this is, I used to listen to it to work out. It became workout music. I think everyone at some point listened to Rocky music and like worked out to it.
Yeah.
You know, I would just drive up to people and like blast Eye of the Tiger as they're running and give them like motivation.
That's awesome.
Like a weirdo, but I mean, hey, you know. It works.
Yeah, that's awesome. I definitely want to talk about that car scene, like the like montage, which we'll get to. Zach, you can go next. Have you seen this before?
I did. So yes, I have seen Rocky IV before.
Okay, so just me.
I knew I had seen 1 and 2, and then I knew that I had seen either 3, 4, or 5, but I haven't seen all the Rocky films. I have seen the Creed films. So this wasn't my first time watching Rocky IV. This film is so 80s, man. It's so incredibly 80s, and I love it. The soundtrack is just, you know, peak. Sylvester Stallone's performance. And it's funny watching this film now versus the first time that I watched it, and I was probably like, I don't know, 9 or 10 when I saw it for the first time. Yeah. And I have a different perspective on Drago's character now than I did back then, I think. And sort of I see him in a different light. Like, he's definitely the antagonist in the film, but I'm not sure he's like this evil figure that I thought he was in my youth, right? And for me, it's the training regiment that he, like the difference between his training regiment in Russia, and he's running through the snow and he's doing all this, like he's chopping wood and he's helping that, you know, farmer whose wagon fellow, you know, all that kind of stuff, versus this like built in a lab, perfect body, you know, Russian athlete, right? Yeah, I mean, this is peak 80s cinema. You know what I mean? Like, this is where it's at. So
yeah. No, I agree with both of you, really. It's weird. I didn't really know what to expect, but I kind of knew what to expect, obviously, because, like, I know the story. I know Drago and stuff. But, you know, to echo you, Zach, I didn't realize how quintessential 80s this was. But I also didn't realize, because I want to talk about later the director's cut. I'm not sure if you've seen that one.
You know, it's funny. I've looked for the director's cut. I have not seen the director's cut. It's
okay.
I've not seen
that's
that.
Good.
Is it?
Because I watched this one and I thought, oh shit, did I watch the wrong version?
We watched the theatrical. The theatrical has the robot,
but
and the director's cut does not have the robot.
Yeah.
And the robot. Do you guys know? Do you guys know like the secret behind that? The robot. The fact.
No.
Oh,
no.
So the robot was initially used to help his son when they're singing "Happy Birthday" to Paulie. The script was actually written on the robot's chest. And then I guess...
Something happened
where Stallone took the robot out or did something where he didn't want to pay royalties. It was something like that. I read about this.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, the director's cut doesn't have the robot.
Yeah.
Like, apparently it's not in there at all. Which I thought is interesting because I will say the robot, I was like, huh. This is interesting. But I, you know, like it's one of those things where I was like, okay, like it's funny because the robot, without getting too much into spoilers, serves in a couple of ways to show one, I would say wealth as where he is in his life, but also it's kind of used as a device to show the growth of Polly and kind of his arc of the movie. But I had an absolute blast watching this. There were some parts where I was like, okay, yeah, it felt a little campy to me, but in a way that kind of fit for the movie. But I loved if you really kind of dive into it, like with Apollo's like motivation to fight Drago and like his story. There's elements of like what it means to get older and kind of like life doesn't stop for anybody. And then of course, I mean, Rocky's built on the underdog story. But man, I love the editing. I love the editing on this movie. The like freeze frames, the transitions.
Yep.
I was like, man, I just feel like he was like told the editor, he's like, man, just go absolutely bonkers.
He was on top of the editors. I watched a lot of the behind the scenes stuff. There's scenes where he's on top of the editor. He's like, no, you got to say it this way. And it's funny because I'm the same way. When I'm doing a film,
you have to.
This is your vision of how you see it. But I know that I don't know if you guys know, but Carl Weathers and Dolph Lundgren did not get along on set.
I don't know the whole story, but I did see one thing about like they got into a, like an actual fight.
Yeah, well, Lundgren kept hitting him hard, and he didn't like it. And then there was
they actually punched. They actually punched in this movie. Yeah.
Stallone ended up in the ICU. He ended up in the hospital.
Yeah, I do know that story.
Yeah.
He got like hit in the chest, I think, and had to go to the hospital. But yeah, I'm really excited to dive in because this was a blast to watch. And it's one that has really become like a quintessential 80s film, you know? I get that like Rocky One is like the Rocky movie.
Yeah.
But what's funny is that I, you know, as somebody who hadn't seen, well, I guess hardly any of them, I've seen the first one. If I didn't know better, I would say that Rocky versus Drago fight is the more iconic.
Yeah,
Rocky fight.
To me, it's the best soundtrack and the best fight sequence.
That I was blown away because I had subtitles on. The soundtrack is so specific. I love that. I mean, because like obviously, also I did not know that Living in America was written for this movie.
Well, it was James Brown's second. That was his second biggest hit ever.
I was like, James Brown's here, and I was like, oh, this is the song. I know this song.
Living in America.
Yeah, that's crazy. I had no idea. That's amazing. And that's a whole, like that scene is a whole nother commentary on, you know, like the culture of the U.S. versus the Soviet Union versus all these things. So it's really actually a pretty heavy film when you dive into it. But first, we have to wave the spoiler flag just in case anybody hasn't seen this and doesn't want to get spoiled from a 40-year-old movie. Spoilers here on out. Will, this is a part of the show that has become legendary in some circles, and it is the famous Movie in a Minute segment.
Okay.
And as a guest, we like to have our guests attempt Movie in a Minute. So the rules are you don't get any extra points for doing it faster. We recommend, well, actually, no, I'm just going to say you have to use all 60 seconds.
Okay.
We had somebody once try and do it in 10 seconds, doesn't count.
Okay, got it.
You got 1 minute and you have to be as detailed or just whatever you want. Usually whenever I do it, the first 40 seconds are really detailed and then the last 20 is just gibberish.
Okay.
So however you want to do it, 60 seconds.
You let me know when I start. Give me the timer.
So actually, I don't know. Let me see. My phone's right here. I can use it. All right. Let me pull up a timer. I'm going to pause that. All right, come on. Goodness gracious. All right, are you ready?
I'm ready.
I'm just going to hold it up like this so you can see.
All right, cool.
All right, this is our special guest, Will LaSalle, doing Rocky IV in 1 minute. In 3, 2, 1, go.
After Rocky defeats Clubber Lang, the movie begins with him in that famous fight scene between him and Clubber Lang. He defeats Clubber Lang. Then on, he goes on to his best friend, Apollo Creed, who feels he wants to come out of retirement to prove himself. He faces Ivan Drago against all odds. Ivan Drago ends up killing Apollo Creed in the middle of the ring. Rocky refuses to throw in the towel. He then ventures off into self-doubt on if he could beat the Russian. He goes out to Russia. He starts training. He ends up speaking to his wife. His wife doesn't believe in him, but he realizes this is what he has to do. It becomes an arc of redemption. It also becomes an arc of revenge. He ends up defeating Drago, and at the end, it signifies him beating the U.S., defeating Russia. At the end of the film, he tells everyone, if I can change, you can change, and we all can change. The film ends. Everyone goes wild, and everyone loves Rocky. He's hoisted up. He has the American flag, and he says, Adrian, I did it.
Perfect. That was spot on. Amazing.
Thank you.
Well done. Well done, well done, well done. All right. That officially means it's time to dive in. So usually how this works is we start at the beginning and then we go wherever it takes us.
All right, cool.
So I actually, you said something during that. I totally forgot about the implications of the throw in the towel scene.
Yeah. He says, throw in the towel. and he doesn't throw the towel, and he kind of
throw the damn towel.
And he has that iconic boss sweater. That's the old, I have one of those.
Oh yeah. That's awesome.
He's ready to throw it in.
Yeah. Okay, so we see that's Rocky winning the heavyweight title, correct? Am I correct in that?
Like, he doesn't,
at the beginning.
He loses. So in Rocky III, he loses to Clubber Lang. Burgess Meredith, who played the Penguin, who plays Mickey, he dies, has a heart attack, and then he beats Clubber Lang. So the movies always begin with the previous Rocky, like whatever the fight was. Mm-hmm. So he beats Clubber Lang back for the title. So he's the champ, but when he fights Drago, it's not for a title. Yeah. It's literally for revenge in Russia. Yeah.
Yeah, he vacated that. So we start with him on top, and Apollo is, he's retired, right? And they have that friendly fight in the ring. I really loved their chemistry, because again, like, I haven't seen a lot of these. I don't think I've seen any of them with Apollo in them, actually.
They're honestly really great. One, two, three, four, five was with Tommy Morrison. I wasn't a fan. It was Rocky. I mean, Stallone even said it was one of his worst movies, but Rocky 1, 2, 3, 4 to me are the best ones.
Yeah. I loved when they're in the practice ring. Mm-hmm. To me, it felt like their relationship felt very lived in and very real, very authentic, in the sense of they have a long history. But also, to me, set up the foundation of hey, they're getting older. Mm-hmm. You know, they can't do it like they used to. Which I think is one of the most powerful underlying thing, which I think is interesting, because Rocky does technically do it, if you will. He beats Drago. But why, let me ask you this. Why do you think Apollo, and this goes for either of you guys, had to fight him? Do you think it was just a denial of no, I don't want to, I'm still in it, you know, or does it go back to this is who we are, this is who we am. I can't be anything else except for a fighter.
Zach, what do you think, Zach?
Yeah, I definitely think it's, you know, he has the soul of a fighter. I mean, he's arguing with Rocky. I think it's at Rocky's house. Mm-hmm. And he's having this argument with him. And he says, you know, we can't be reborn. This is all we have. You know, and all that money and the fame, it's nothing compared to who we are, you know. So I definitely think he just doesn't want to give up on that, right? He has to, I mean, he's got to beat him. The second he sees on the TV that this amateur, you know, Olympic gold medalist Russian fighter is coming over and wants to do exhibition matches, it's like, it's in his head. I think he's in the pool, you know, and it's in his head from that moment, you know, I have to do this kind of thing. And, you know, Rocky points it out. It's kind of him versus him, right? He's got to prove to himself that he still has it, right?
Yeah.
What do you think, Will?
I think you're right. I think you're spot on with that, because in the pool, you see them throwing, like they said, throwing the ball, and he wanted to prove himself. He wanted to prove he still had it. You know, what I love about Apollo Creed's character is the cockiness of the character, but the significance of how much he believes in Rocky, and he kind of wanted Rocky to believe in him. I think that was really, it was kind of a trade-off in this one. You know, it's always, he was always training Rocky, you know, but I think for this one, I think it was more like, believe in me, I can do it. And I think Rocky knew deep down, the same way you guys didn't see Rocky III, how Mickey felt the same way towards Rocky when Rocky went against Clubber Lang, Mr. T. Mm-hmm. And he said, listen, I don't know, I think you should really think about it. And it was kind of like, well, you don't believe in me? So it was kind of that same formula that they used.
Yeah.
I really like the... I agree with both of you, but I think there's an interesting moment for me when Apollo's actually in the ring and, you know, is just getting his ass kicked. And, you know, I think it's in between round one and two, when it's like, you can't, like, Rocky's like, this is, we're done. You need to call this. And he's saying, like, don't stop this fight. You know, like, if you're my friend, don't stop this fight. To me, it felt like, I'm not saying he was reserved to, like, I'm going to go die. I'm not saying that. But it felt like I'd rather, I guess, be nothing than not be, I don't want to say on top, because that feels disingenuous, but, like, not, I don't know, I guess not.
He was all in.
Yeah, like, he was like, I'd rather just not be here.
Yeah. If he wasn't boxing, he wasn't living. Basically, I agree with you on that. Yeah, he didn't feel alive. He wanted to feel significant, and you know, I think also if you watch the movie, also when the commentators are talking about, like, I think there's something that goes on in the movie. I forgot what particular scene it is. I think either Apollo's doing commentary for something, and there's something where he's in a suit, and it's like, oh, the has been champ. You know, they start telling, like, can Apollo Creed? And I think that's what gets in his own head. I think that's what got him killed, too. His pride definitely got him killed.
Yeah. Well, there's the scene where they're like,
it's like the press conference.
It's the press conference.
They're all sitting at the table.
He said, I retired more men than Social Security. Is that what he said?
Yeah. And it's Drago's trainer or somebody.
Well, so honestly, Drago's side at that press conference, they were just like, we're here to fight, we're here to be professional, we want to prove that, you know, Russians can box with the best of them. And this is the scene where Apollo, to me, goes from like confident to almost like hubris, right? Where it's just like, at one point, maybe it's a misunderstanding between like exhibition fight for the American side, where it's for entertainment and fun, so he's just like poking fun, right? And he's, you know, giving the media a show.
But then
from the Russian side's perspective, this is like, Russians weren't, in the 70s and 80s, Russians weren't allowed to like box for titles and, you know, professionally box, right? So this is like their chance to say, we should be able to, you know, we can compete with the best of them. So they were taking it more seriously. So from their perspective, like, this is just like straight hubris, and they get, you know, agitated with him, with what he's saying, you know, like, I'm going to show this boy how to box. I'll show him the ropes, you know, that kind of stuff. And he sort of provokes them to, you know, insult him
and make an example.
Right?
And Drago makes an example out of him. That's what it really is. It's almost like you're mocking Russia. You mocked the country. He took it very personal, even though it was supposed to be an exhibition match.
Right.
He wanted to take it further, because I think he took it out on Apollo. Like, okay, you want to disrespect me? I'm going to make you pay. And that's what that really was.
It's funny too, because Apollo dishes it out, but as soon as it's brought back, he like can't. He's like, oh, okay. And then without knowing what he signed up for, I guess, you know, he kind of jumps in the ring. But what was I going to say? There's so many little lines leading up to the fight where he just keeps saying like, oh, I feel like I'm alive again. You know, he's dancing. And what's funny is that I really thought the scene where, I know we've already skipped straight to the fight with Drago and Apollo, but the scene where he comes like dancing down in the Uncle Sam robe and the hat.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, this is wild. And like, I really enjoyed
Drago's just looking at him, and he's just like, living in America. He's just and Drago's like, you don't even know, man, I'm gonna destroy you.
Well,
like,
yes, that, but also I loved when Drago was like coming up.
Oh, rising up from the ring.
It's like,
and it was like stunning all the lights.
Yeah, it's like his like senses are being overloaded, and it's
right.
I thought that's interesting, because it just shows like a whole different world, in a sense of like, where you do feel like, well, one side's taking it seriously, and one side thinks he's just going to cakewalk over here and just flick him, and he's going to be done. Mm-hmm. And it makes me wonder, like, you know, what Apollo was after. Was he after? He was after the performance, like all of it, you know. Which this tells us all this time about that. If you chase that too much, it doesn't actually lead you to what you think it's going to lead you to, you know. What did y'all think of like Rocky's role throughout this, to the point from when he's like, I'm going to fight Drago, to the throw in the towel? Like, do you think he did enough? Do you think he was being a good friend, if you will, or like, was he just trying to be a good friend by supporting his friend too, you know?
Well, when he throws in the towel, Duke does tell him, he goes, throw in the damn towel. And he looks at Rocky, he looks at Apollo, and Apollo's like, don't. He's bleeding from the mouth. He's like, don't do it. And I guess he wanted to respect his wishes, and he ended up, you know, killing his best friend. But I think Stallone's mindset is what I love the most. It's almost like he's mourning. You see him very vulnerable in the film, which is something we saw in Rocky III with Mickey, but not to this magnitude and not as serious, where you see this guy with a full-on beard. He's training in Russia. His wife doesn't believe in him. that was big. Yeah. Like, I think that he had, it was even more fuel to the fire for Rocky. Like, it was all like, all right, my wife doesn't believe in me. I lost my best friend.
Yeah.
My best friend's trainer is now my trainer. And now he wears the iconic trunks, the Apollo trunks. Yep. So that was big too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for me, Zach, I mean, I don't know if you want to touch on that. I think that was pretty deep for me when I saw that and his mindset.
Yeah. Was your question about, like, leading up to Apollo's fight,
or
throughout,
like,
the film,
his approach to Apollo, and then afterwards, like, because I'm sure he felt like, well, if I throw it in the towel, he'd still be alive, X, Y, and Z, all these kind of things.
I think leading up to the fight, and I'm not saying that I would let you die, but I think I do think that he did everything that I would do for my best friend, right? Where he tries to, like, point out, you know, are you sure this is you want to do this? Mm. Are you sure your motivations are right in this? You know, and sort of like, you know, push those buttons and try to bring someone to see. But ultimately, it's their choice, right? And something stuck out to me at the funeral where he said, like, you always had to do things your way, and now I understand. I think he came to that understanding during the fight where he said, oh, he's either gonna win or he's gonna die. You know, maybe not literally, but.
Yep.
That was his mindset, right?
Yeah.
Because he said, no matter what, do not throw in the towel, no matter what.
And he actually says pre-fight, he says, like, you'll understand when this is over.
Yeah, you'll understand when this is over.
Yeah.
That's right.
And Russia,
and then
I think,
he
I
takes
Drago
that mindset into
lose.
His fight, right?
Yeah.
Where he's talking to his wife on the stairs, mm-hmm. and he says, if Drago wants to beat me, he's going to have to kill me. But if he wants to do that, he's going to have to be willing to die himself, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
basically
yeah.
saying, like, he's going to have to meet me where I'm at. It's me or him sort of thing.
And she tells him, you can't win. You've seen him. You know how strong he is. Suicide.
What's great about that is that I thought the way that she said that line.
Oh, man.
It felt like it just came out. Like, she didn't. Yeah. It's not like she was like, oh, I'm going to say this and that's going to stop him. It just was like, stop. You know, just like. And it seemed like she. Even, like, she didn't realize what she said until she said it.
It almost sounded like a cry for help, like when she said, you can't win. And he said, Adrian.
Oh, yeah. Right.
He goes, that's what you married, Adrian. I'm a fighter.
Right.
You know, we can't change what we are. She goes, of course. Have you seen the papers? It's suicide. And then he goes, you know, all we can do is go with what we got. And that's when he says, to beat me, he's going to have to kill me. And that's deep. You know, he walks out. Like, to me, I think that was the scene for me. That was like it.
Yeah.
That was like the peak. Like, my wife doesn't believe in me. She thinks I'm going to suffer the same fate. And Rocky had so much pressure. You see him in the mirror, looking in the mirror, talking to Duke. I mean, everything, the buildup, the mindset. I think there was a little bit of self-loathing. I think he had a lot of regret. I feel like he could have saved. So there was a lot of feelings all, like, festered up in him.
And I loved in that scene. They kept, like, half of his face in shadow, like, for most of that scene. It was lined up perfectly so, and it's just like, with his best friend gone, and then with his wife saying, "You can't do this," it felt like half of him was, like, just not existent anymore, and he had to kind of build himself back up.
Adrian's never told him this. Adrian, if you watch all the films, she's never told him you can't win. Never. In Rocky 3, he has self-doubt. He's running on the beach with Apollo. He's fighting Clubber Lang. And it was really, not to get off topic, but it was really signified that he was scared. And she goes, you're human, right? I'm scared too. Like, she was always his voice of reasoning. Adrian was always his hope. Like, so for her, the one person to tell you that you can't win, that was kind of like, oh, wow, like, my wife, really.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, that's, you know, to me, any man who's married and their wife tells them that, that's like the dagger. It's like, whoa, I got it. Like, whoa, that was deep.
Oh, yeah. There's a, this is not quite as serious, but this is a little peek into my world. When I do music and stuff, I like to wear outlandish clothes. I have a pair of, like, pink bell bottoms and stuff. You know, I like to get out there, and I don't care what anybody says.
He's going for the Harry Styles vibe.
It's true. I don't care. I don't care what anybody says. But if my wife goes, I'm like, I'm changing clothes. I don't care, because, you know, there are certain people who, like, and what's funny is that if everybody else said, you look like an idiot, but she was like, I love him, I'd be like, cool.
That's all that matters.
You know?
Yeah.
Or if Zach, if I mean, if you believed in me, then I would do it.
Well, there was one show, I do want to point out, there was show where you thought your pants were a certain color and they weren't, because you're like kind of colorblind.
I am colorblind.
And it wasn't until Hannah came in and was like, those are not the color that you think they are, that you realized.
That is true. So we're kind of at the halfway. Well, so my wife's known Zach longer than she's known me. So
oh, wow.
They go way back. So we're kind of at the halfway point in the sense of Rocky's about to go off and fight. So I want to ask you, kind of bring it back to like your career and stuff. You've mentioned this staircase scene more than once. So not necessarily that, but like take that for like some sort of launch pad to what about this movie has influenced you and has made it into your movies, whether it be the Hilo trilogy or your new stuff, Graves, whatever. Is there anything that you can look at and say, oh, this is where I've got this? Not in a way of like, oh, I stole this from Rocky IV, but like
right.
You can see this movie seeping into your own creativity.
Because honestly, it's the story of Rocky IV, and it's also Stallone's actual real life story. I've worked a job. I worked for the city of New York for about 15 years, and it was kind of like before I even got into filmmaking, I was very miserable, and I was at a job where I always felt like I wanted more. And I deserve more. I think everyone feels like that at some point in their life. They're not happy with the direction they're going. And I truly believe that rejection is always redirection. And for me, watching that movie kind of ignited something in me. It always made me feel like, all right, look at the underdog. Look, Stallone did this. And he did it with, you know, how many times he went to MGM and they told him, you know, he tried to sell them the script. And they said, you're not an actor.
Yeah.
He said his one stipulation was that he had to be the actor. For me, I had so many people that when I, you know, if you want to kill a big dream, you tell it to a small-minded person, they'll kill your dream. And I used to tell I used to tell people at work, like, hey, man, I want to make films. And they were like, well, you only make $27,000 a year, man. How are you going to make films? Yeah. So it was kind of like that, you know, and I realized I was around low-frequency people. I was like, all right, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to use this as fuel, and I'm going to show them. I'm tired of telling people. I'm just going to show them. I'm going to do it with no budget. And my fiance thought I was out of my mind. She really did. I bought $10,000 worth of equipment, quit that job, and I was off to make my films. And now I'm five films in, and I started with four cast members, and now I'm up to 70 cast members I have now from Los Angeles to Pennsylvania. Yep. So it's just all about perspective. And to me, I had to get used to two things. I had to get used to rejection, and I had to get comfortable with failing. I think everyone should fail. I think it's healthy to fail. And those were the things that really drove me. And I think that watching that movie, I've watched it so much because it just something about the underdog and something about the score and just everything always spoke to me.
Yeah. Well, there's also the fact that, you know, when you acknowledge this is crazy kind of thing. Like it makes me think of that scene where he's talking to his son and he's like, you know what? I get scared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean... What is it? There's I think I'm going to quote, believe it or not, I think I'm going to quote Bruce Almighty. If y'all seen Bruce Almighty.
I love Bruce Almighty. Yeah.
I think it's from that. I think it's Morgan Freeman because he plays God.
Yeah.
And says something like, when you pray for courage, does God give you courage or does he give you the opportunity to be courageous?
Right.
There just comes a point where it's like, you just got to do it, I guess. You know, like if you keep waiting for people to tell you, yeah, that can work.
Yeah, it'll never be the perfect time to do it. You know, and I always tell people, you either find the way or you'll find an excuse. That's it.
Yeah.
Man, taking us to church today. I love that. That's awesome. I had a question, but I forgot what it was.
In a way, it sounds to me like those low frequency... it sounds like previous friends, maybe not friends anymore, but those low frequency people that doubted you and said, how are you going to do that? You're only making $27,000 a year. You know, that was almost like your Rocky IV stairs scene where it was like, no, I'm going to prove y'all wrong. I'm going to go to the lab.
It was actually, I wanted to tell him it was actually 28,000, but thanks.
Oh, okay. There you go.
But you know, listen, honestly, I always saw myself in these films. I've always like, kind of like may sound weird, but like I've always kind of put myself in that character's position and be like, oh, that's yeah. me. I can totally relate to what he's feeling right now. And I think for me, like I'm a huge nerd. Like my fiance is like, you buy Ninja Turtle jackets. And I'm like, I'm a geek. I go to Comic-Con. I'm always dressing up. I've always been like that. And to be honest with you guys, before I had the courage to make the film, I always felt like I needed someone like the permission to start doing what I loved or to start pursuing something that I was passionate about.
I love talking about this.
Yeah, it's just like I and once I broke free from that and I was like, I don't care what people think. If I fail, so what? At least I can say I tried, you know. And I always say this, and I don't want to without going to church, but this is so true. Like you have a birth date, we know that date, right? And you have a death date that you don't know about. And what you do in between will ultimately define you. So I just want to leave my footprint in the world and let the world know, hey, man, Wilfred LaSalle was here, and this is the films he made with no budget, and no one believed in anything he was doing. And look where he's at.
Yeah, well, it's so funny. And I promise, Zach, you reel me in, because I will talk about this. We're going to blink, and it's going to be 11 p.m. So I love this kind of stuff, just because, you know, being in the creative industry, like, because like my main passion is music, and it's, you have to be crazy to do this, whether it's film, whether it's music, whether it's anything. And to think, it's to have the audacity to go, yeah, I can be the one in a million. I can. And the thing is that it's not even, you know, like I don't have to be Harry Styles to be like, I'm successful. And you don't have to win an Oscar to be successful. I think people have this image of what it's supposed to look like. And in reality, if you make a film of any kind, if you write a song of any kind, if you do anything, if you paint something of any kind, that's a beautiful thing by itself.
Yeah.
You don't need somebody to say, hey, that's good or that's not. And to let go, because I've dealt with that my whole life, being like, oh, well, you know, I can't really do this until I make sure it's okay with everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're going to be waiting your whole life, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's sort of like this podcast where we're just like, hey, let's just do it. I mean, like our first episode, gosh, I'm sure it was one awful.
Will, don't go listen to
it. Don't listen to that. I think it was like, I think our first episode was like Man of Steel.
It was, because Hunter wanted to do all the DC films.
I'm a big DC fan.
Yeah. Oh, me too. It's hard to be a DC fan now, but I mean, with James Gunn taking over, I don't know.
Well, you know,
he canceled.
I just want him to.
Yeah, he can't. I'm waiting for Superman Legacy. I know Madam Web and all these other films bomb with Marvel, but like,
so Blue Beetle. Actually, we didn't see Blue Beetle or Aquaman 2.
I didn't see Aquaman 2 either.
We can talk about it. I don't care. Let's talk about it.
From my perspective, I just want to get this out there. I have a little bit of superhero fatigue right now, so I'm waiting for Superman Legacy.
Yeah.
We'll see if they turn a corner, and I'll give it a. But like Marvel, I'm sort of like off the boat right now.
Well, Deadpool 3 might save the MCU.
That looks funny. Yeah, that looks great. That.
So we'll see.
That's fair.
We actually are going to do Madam Web in a few weeks, just because we heard it was like
awful.
Because we had an absolute blast seeing Morbius.
Morbius was
a great time.
There are certain movies that are so bad they're good, right?
Yeah.
And Morbius was on that train, and it sounds like Madam Web is like right there with it. So
yeah, I saw Morbius. I thought it was Listen, Jared Leto just needs to stick to 30 Seconds to Mars. He just needs to stick to
Mars. There you go.
You didn't like his Joker? Come on, man.
No.
But no, actually, it's so funny. I texted Zach today. James Gunn, look, I'm not going to talk about DC. I'm not, I promise. But real quick, I thought it's funny. I'm excited for them just to have a direction.
Right.
Okay. Like, I was a defender of Henry Cavill. I liked Henry Cavill.
Oh, me too. Loved
him. He just posted, Zach's gonna roll his eyes, so I'm gonna say this. He just posted a picture of like the whole cast. They started filming, on like at a studio, and the studio's actually about 15 minutes from where we are. It's down in Atlanta. It's called Trilla Studios, and so they're down here. They're making the movie.
They film a lot in Atlanta. They film The Walking Dead. They film so many movies down in Atlanta.
Walking Dead is about 15 minutes from where we are right now.
Right. Walking Dead's in Sonoya, and Trillith is kind of in the other direction, but it's also about 15 minutes. They do a lot of filming in the metro area. Yep. They do filming, like a lot of scenes out in the woods, they do around Stone Mountain, which is north of Atlanta. Yeah, they're filming all over the place.
If you ever come down and film in Atlanta, let us know, man.
Yeah.
I've never been to Atlanta. I'm dying to go, to be honest with you. I heard it's beautiful.
It's a cool city. It's a cool awesome city. It's growing like a weed, dude. I'm sure I just showed my southern heritage there. But anyway, yeah, you know, it's like trying to circle back. I know we're on a tangent. I think it's really cool to use like Stallone's story and the Rocky story as a kind of fuel for your own. But getting back onto the movie, so like when he goes, I'm kind of going off on a tangent now. It's very metaphorical in a sense because you talked about how your filmmaking style is very guerrilla and it's very DIY, if you will. That's kind of a weird term to use, but you look at what you have and you use it.
Yeah.
And I think about his training regimen, right, versus Drago. Who was given everything, which I actually read there was actual like science, like sports science gear that was years away from market that they actually used for this movie. I don't know if that's true or not. But you look at Drago, I would say maybe that's Warner Brothers. Maybe that's, you know, Paramount, some massive studio. Then you look at Rocky, who's an indie filmmaker like you, who has just what he has around him.
Mm-hmm.
And you just use it to, like, you don't have to have, I'm trying to think of what the new crazy camera is. That's like 90 grand. You can use whatever you have to make beautiful art. You know, I think that's really cool. It's a very cool parallel to your own life, to this movie, you know? Absolutely. I don't know if you saw that, but that's kind of,
Definitely. I definitely agree with you on that. You know, listen, when you have nothing and you're doing these films broke, like I'm doing them with no budget, guerrilla style, like I told you, I don't know if I told you, the actors, they don't get paid monetarily. They get paid through reels and they're able to shop for agents. So that's how I'm able to like make these films. Cause I can't pay them, but, when you're broke, your back is up against the wall. I think you're just forced to be creative. And I think you just get more creative because there's no other option. So I think that's kind of like what's helped me and what's helped my style of filmmaking is just like, all right, well, you know, the cast is like, how are we going to shoot this? We're in police uniforms. I'm like, don't worry about it. We'll just shoot it. Don't worry about it. I'll deal with it. They're like, what? Yeah. I'm like, we'll just do it. I said, ask for permission, not for forgiveness. Forgiveness, not permission. That's what it is.
I think it was I want to say it was like Entertainment Monthly or Weekly or something. One of the articles that you have linked on your site. And there was a sentence that said like, talking about, you know, the just kind of go film it kind of thing. And it used a phrase. It was like, you know, bypassing certain permits for things. And I was like, do they mean actual permits? Just go out there and be like, just film it. Just go film it. And then we'll get out of here.
Like, listen, I almost arrested like 17 times filming these movies.
That's just cool stories. Yeah, that's just cool stories, you know?
I had the cinematographer. It's funny. I hired this guy and, we're doing a highway scene for Graves, and it was Graves or Hilo. It was Graves, and we're on the highway. We shut down the highway. We're just doing it. This guy's hanging out the trunk. I got another guy hanging out, and he's like, "I'm like, listen, I will never ask you to do something that I won't do." I'm like, "If you're not comfortable with it, I'll just do it." He's like, "No, no, no." So one of the cast members, he's like, "Wait, are you really gonna make him hang out the car?" I'm like, "Absolutely." He's got to get the shot. I'm like, and he's like, and one of the other cast members goes, this is because it was the first time he worked with me. So I had the other previous cast members like, "Oh, you don't understand. Will's out of his mind. It's going to happen. Yeah, you're going to see it." And it's normal. He goes, "And it's only going to be used in the trailer if it makes the film for like 2-3 seconds. He's like, "What?" So that's just extreme how, you know, just this how extreme it is for me. Because I want these films to be like, wait, that's an indie film? Like, yeah, it is, you know, but I don't want it to look like one, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It's funny that. So you were talking about the training regimen and how to you it showed like the resourcefulness of, you know, guerrilla filmmaking. It's funny because when I was watching it and I was watching this film with a mind towards, you know, well, this is something that has shaped, you know, your filmmaking. What I took from it was that, you know, the repetition and how inglorious it can be sometimes to create art and, you know, how down and dirty you have to get running through the snow. I mean, think about being a musician. How many nights do you spend in a shitty alley, you know, like, or as a filmmaker, 16 hours on set eating boiled hot dogs, you know, and then you got to go to sleep, wake up the next day and do it again. You know what I mean? Yeah. But this is what you have to do. You know, Rocky has to go through that in order to get to where he's at. And that's what you have to go through to become a musician. That's what you have to go through to become a filmmaker. Right.
So 10,000 hours.
That's yeah. like the yeah, 10,000 hours, right? And it's not yep. pretty. You know what yeah. I mean?
Well, or I think of us, of me and Zach, where it's like, how many really cringy and shitty podcast episodes are you going to do before you have any sort of...
There was an episode, Will, we recorded the whole thing, except we weren't recording. So
we just
have the conversation again.
That just happened to me in Oculus. Absolutely. Oh, so my editor was looking for this last bit of audio he had to sync, and our sound guy never recorded the audio on the boom mic. Mm. So on the external recorder. So now I have to use the camera audio, which is good because I have the Sony A7S3. So you're not even going to be able to tell the difference. We're probably going to like enhance it with AI or figure it out.
Right.
But like that happened to me, and I'm like, I know I sent you the audio. He's like, no, I don't have this audio. I can't sync it. I'm like looking through it literally last night. And so it happens. These are things that just happen. You just, adapt.
I remember I was, so like for my job, I actually use the A7S3 at work, but we also use Blackmagic's.
Okay.
And most of the stuff that I shoot, I'm not a big camera person. I know a little bit. I'm more of an editor, but also a producer. But I film a lot of like interviews, like talking head stuff. I remember I was sitting through an interview. I was in DC. And just sitting there, this is like 20 minutes into like a 30 or 40 minute interview. So mostly done, halfway done. And I see up in the corner that the frame rate was like 60 frames per second. And I was like, oh, this is in slow motion. I was like, okay.
Oh, man.
Sweet. So I just like quietly just like stop, change it, start it back. And then we finished it. And I got back to like Atlanta and I was like, I had to like calculate this. I had to speed it up. It was like 200 and like 205.7%. To find the exact like
to match it up,
but I was like, "We'll figure it out."
Yeah,
figure it out,
and you will. When your back is up against the wall, you have no choice but to figure it out.
That's right.
But real quick, I want to ask you, Zach. I was trying to do that. This table is so low that it was just like an awkward. Moving on, you had a take about Drago. I don't see what you think about this. Well, as somebody who knows this film front and back, and views it as the revenge and the redemption story. Zach's take was that Drago, while he's the antagonist, might not actually be the bad guy that he's portrayed.
I don't think he's evil. He's the bad guy in the film. He kills Apollo Creed.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I'm not saying he's like sunshines and rainbows, but
yeah.
So what do you see him as?
Well, okay, so I was thinking about the original exhibition fight, and I was kind of touching on it earlier where Russian fighters weren't allowed to compete for anything, mm-hmm. And so he comes in and he's kind of being pushed by his wife and that other guy who I'm not sure if he was like a politician or just like who is funding.
Well, he was sitting next to, I think it was supposed to be Gorbachev, but he was sitting next to the guy, and his wife is very much a, let's say PR for him. Right.
His wife is Bridget Nielsen. I think it was Bridget Nielsen in the movie.
Yeah. So he's coming in and he wants to prove himself. I mean, even at the end in the final fight, when the guy sitting next to Gorbachev comes down and he's like, "What are you doing? He's weak. Beat him." Yeah. And he's like, "I'm gonna do this for me. I'm gonna win for me." So it's all about like proving himself, right? He's an amateur fighter. He's won a gold in the Olympics, and there's a different rule set. So in the Olympics and in amateur boxing, they have something called a standing eight count, where like if you punch somebody and it looks like you might have hurt them, like it was a pretty good hit, they do a standing eight count to make sure that person can continue. In professional boxing, they really don't do that. It's like you got to hit the ground, otherwise they're not gonna, So think about from his perspective, he's coming into this fight against Apollo Creed, who was at the. I mean, he's been retired for 5 years, but he watched him fight Rocky, and they went, blow for blow and took a bunch of punishment because, Rocky always gets the shit knocked out of him.
Yeah. It's like a prerequisite.
And then comes back,
the first
three
rounds and then he can fight.
So he's thinking, I have to put this guy on the ground to win. Mm-hmm. And this guy can take a lot of punishment. So he's coming out and yes, he has a chip on his shoulder. Will, you were saying earlier, he kind of dished out some extra punishment because Apollo was being so abrasive leading up to the fight, right? Mm-hmm. But he doesn't hit the ground until he's dead. So what is Drago supposed to do? You know what I mean?
Oh, that's a good point, actually.
Yeah. Like even in the first round when he like gets him on the ropes, he's on the ropes, but he doesn't go down.
Yeah.
He doesn't hit the ground until he's twitching.
Well, it's funny because he doesn't even like Drago doesn't he's not even allowed to speak for himself
right.
in a lot of ways. And so you kind of wonder like was he just like this guy who was groomed for this his entire life? Because he's a machine. Like he's massive. But he doesn't, I think the only time that he speaks for himself is when he says, "I will win for me."
Yeah. Yeah. At the end, when he's like, when he grabs the guy by the neck, he's like, Ya tibia.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's fascinating because, I think this kind of leads into like Rocky's last little speech where by the end of it, I don't even think he looks over at Drago as like this monster anymore.
You know what I mean? And I don't think Drago looks at him the same way that he did before the fight. Yeah. It's like they, just like him and Apollo, I think, gained respect for each other, you know?
Yeah.
I think that Drago and Rocky gain respect for each other as the fight goes on. Think about, you know, Rocky is in his corner and he's got a cut on his eye, mm-hmm. but he cuts Drago. It's like round four or something, right?
Yeah.
And he's in his corner and he says he's human. Or maybe
I loved this.
He's like a piece of iron, he says, I think.
Yeah. And then Drago says he's a piece of iron. So it's like there's sort of
you see it switching.
Right, right. The power dynamic is shifting for sure.
So as somebody who's seen this film so many times, have you seen it like that before? Like, what do you think of that perspective? Do you agree?
I agree with Zach. I also
he could be.
Yeah. Also, if you think about it, the crowd changes their mind too. They start cheering for Rocky.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
You know, that's right. And I think that was, he was like, and I think the trainer says, do you hear them? They cheer for him. They cheer for the American.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I definitely agree. I thought that was definitely a good perspective.
Yeah. I think those are the kind of films that I love the movies where the villain isn't,
there's more nuance. It's not just
humanizing.
Maniacally evil villain.
Like,
the
first thing that popped in my head was Thanos, actually, believe it or not, where they say something and you're like, oh, actually, that kind of makes a little bit of sense.
Right.
Yeah. You're saying you agree with Thanos.
No, but these
things. Wants to wipe out half the universe.
No, but his reason is like, we don't have the resources for these people. And it's like,
hey, traffic would be a lot better. Yeah. Is all I'm, you know.
Yeah.
You'd be able to find a taxi in the city, right?
I want to go back for a second because we cannot talk about this because it's already been over an hour and I don't want to go too long, but the montages, man, we got to talk about that car ride. That car ride to me, I was like, oh, this is the 80s, baby. This is the 80s. Yeah. The music's playing.
And the plate says Southpaw.
Yeah. It's just everything was so, it was like dialed up.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you guys have seen, what's that? It's like, I think it's Spinal Tap where he's like, these go to 11.
Yep.
It was dialed up to 11. You know, he's driving in the car. You have the overlays of Drago's face.
No easy way out.
And you see, like, I will say for me, this is just for me, I was like, man, this is a long montage. Because you see there, him and Creed's like entire story, like the entire thing. I think what was funniest to me, and I don't think it's meant to be funny, so please, I'm not saying that as like an insult to the film. I think it's effective. But as somebody who hasn't seen the other Rockies, you just cut to them like hugging in the beach. And I was like, what's happening?
Yeah, that's Rocky 3.
I know it was great. I was like, okay. I just thought it was how much they went for it in that scene. I loved it. I thought it was awesome.
They show, and they actually show 1, 2, 3. They show all the scenes that
you see everything.
Training him. Yeah.
Cause there's,
you get a nice little recap.
Yeah. There's some scenes where I was like, that's Rocky 1. I at least know that much. Go on. Sorry.
And there, it's clear, like while he's in the car, it's almost like he's fighting demons going through this where like he's having this flashback and then he'll like turn his head a little bit and see Drago. He looks in his rearview mirror at one point and sees his wife up the stairs, you know, in the scene and it's really cool how like he's looking around the car and seeing different things as he's driving down this road.
And I don't know how he didn't crash because he takes his eyes off the road a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
he's looking down. He's like looking down at the cameras, like down. I'm like, wait, are you looking in the dashboard? I mean, what's going on here? You would think he's driving a Tesla, right?
Right.
Oh my gosh. Or he's driving in one of the new, I saw a video of somebody.
One of those driverless cabs.
He was like riding in a Tesla wearing the new Apple.
Oh, like, with Vision. The VR?
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, this is rough. But anyway, sorry.
Or I was done.
Yeah.
Also, like the fighting, like during the fights, the way that they cut, like there's one point in the Drago Rocky fight where you just see like them going blow for blow, but it's sort of like overlaying, and you see the sweat flying off of them. I love those shots where you get a good punch and there's just like
spit
water flying everywhere.
Water flying out the mouth. You see the rounds going by. Round seven.
I loved when like after that montage where Rocky sits down, he's like, "What round is it?" And I was like, "Dude, I'm with you," because I think that's intentional. It's like you're supposed to feel pretty kind of disoriented, being like,
"Yeah,
whose fight is this? Where are we? Like, how far is this going?" Because I was sitting there and I was like, "How many rounds are there in a boxing match?"
I think it was 15. I think back in the day it was 15 rounds.
One more, yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah.
And it's crazy how much hype they built up both in the US and in Russia for, purely exhibition match. It really goes to show, how much tension there was, it was the Cold War, right? And so this was like 1980s ice hockey in the Olympics, Miracle on Ice.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Where it was a much bigger deal because of the landscape around it versus just the sporting event itself.
Zach was a hockey player.
I played ice hockey for about 12 years.
But yeah, like it definitely felt, and I think Apollo definitely mentioned that, but it definitely felt bigger than Rocky versus Drago. It was definitely very symbolic of U.S. Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes his, I think he says like, what does he say? He says, like, there's two of us, and you're killing each other.
Yeah, he says, if I can change, then you can change.
And we can all change.
I loved his line of, like, if there's only two of us and you're killing each other, that's better than 20 million.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's a very, very poignant line there for the time.
You see, like, the gloves. Yeah. You see, like, the glove break, but then you see, like, the Russian glove kind of, like, veer off a little bit. It's like.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not subtle, but it is, like it's not trying to shy away from what it's saying, which I think is the best way for films to be, if you're going to say it.
Yeah. One of the things I'll tell you guys, I don't know if you guys thought about this. I don't know if I'm the only weirdo who thought this, but like when Rocky, when Sylvester Stallone grows the beard and he's training, he kind of looks like Al Pacino. I always confused him. I was like, wait, is that Al Pacino in Carlito's Way? I mean, he looks just like him. It's weird. Every time I see that scene, I think Al Pacino. Yeah.
That's funny because I actually, this is, again, I'm showing, I love films, but I was very late to a lot of movies. I didn't see a young Al Pacino movie until I was like 27.
Oh.
Actually older. I think it was Scarface. I hadn't seen Scarface. I was much older. I'd only ever seen Al Pacino old. So I don't,
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's we can just say that he made a cameo.
Well, I'll just tell you this off topic. I'm a nut job, so I was on YouTube and I watched really quick. I watched like the behind the scenes of Scarface, and they shot the scene when he's like, "Say hello to my little friend." I think they did 120 something takes of that. He did it different ways. I think only
that's one of your favorite movies, Zach.
I love Scarface. Scarface is such a good movie.
And I think on YouTube you only see like 4 or 5 takes. You can go on YouTube. Okay. That thing, you can see them, and he says it different ways. He cocks the gun different ways, and I was like, "Oh wow!" Like, and it's weird the way they chose it. Like, they chose that one.
Yeah,
But look at that when you get a chance.
What's the most takes you've done for a shot?
I'd say 40.
Okay, that's 40 a lot.
Forty takes, and that was probably car scenes in graves, because they had to be cut up. They were cut up in different, we had to break them down in sections. Graves is on Tubi if you guys want to see it. Honestly, it's a really good film.
And that's awesome.
It kind of has what influenced it was The Town, Den of Thieves. Point Break was definitely a big influence. President's Mask.
Okay.
Keanu Reeves, Johnny Utah, and Triple Nine was a big influence to that. Yeah. Okay. So we kind of pay homage to Heat, Michael Mann's Heat. We wear the gold teams.
Oh yeah.
Which they're coming out with a sequel. They're coming out with a sequel to that.
They are.
It's gonna be awesome. Yep. And Bill Sarsgaard, is coming out with, they're redoing The Crow, which is my second favorite movie of all time with Brandon Lee.
Yes.
Eric Draven.
We actually, I think I've seen that. I saw that, or at least
that's
parts
a good one.
I've seen The Crow.
The first Crow. The first Crow is the best. Yeah.
No, yeah, that makes you think of like How Many Takes. We also love The Shining. And
oh, yeah, it's great.
I was just.
I don't know her name.
I was just thinking that.
The stair scene with the bat.
Right. Well, it was all of his scenes. So Stanley Kubrick had this almost verging on abuse to the actors on that film, because he really wanted the distress and like the, you know, creeping insanity to come through on the footage. And so he would intentionally do hundreds of takes for just one scene, and, you know, until they were about to break, and then he would use the footage where they were like literally about to break, and he was able to get more emotion out. But again, that seems over the top to me. Yeah. You know,
but I mean, you know, like it's one of those things where like it's strange you never really know. It's almost like, and well, maybe you can talk about this as a director and as somebody who has written a script, and how to get what you actually want from an actor, you know, because it might not even be what you think you meant, but like in the moment you kind of know, hey, this is where you're coming from.
So, you know, so my slogan, and I have shirts made, this is like my biggest slogan in LaSalle Productions, and the cast knows it. It's, we always say, the script is never the script.
Yep.
And
that's literally my mantra. And
it's like a guide.
Yeah, it really is. And what I do is, I'm extreme too, but not that extreme. But what I will do is, I'm not rigid. Like, if I'll tell the actor, I will not call cut. I'll let the actor or actress stay in the scene. I'm like, nope. And even if they go off script, I'm like, listen, give me 90% of this, 90% of what's written. Yeah. But I'm not like, if they're like, oh, I don't want to say it like this, I'll say it like this. I'm like, absolutely, go for it. So I give them a lot of freedom. I think that's very important. Even as a director, you have to trust the actor and actress. It's a collaboration. And they're going to see things a certain way. You'll see it. I'll say, all right, listen, I want you to do it my way. But if you want to do it that way, after a few takes, go with it. And sometimes, almost all the time, it works because they feel it. Yeah. You know? So.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things. Like, so this is just like one of my examples that my last single that I did for music, I had written a song 5 or 6 years ago. At this point, it's been like 6 or 7. And I had played it so many times one way that I could only hear it one way.
Right.
I went to this producer who's a good friend of mine, and I was like, hey man, I know this song can be elevated. I can't hear it anymore. What do you hear? And I mean, within 2 minutes, he hummed a melody that I was like, I would have never gone that way.
Yeah.
And the version of the song that got put out is a way that I could not have gotten there by myself. I needed somebody else's ears. And as a director, you might need someone else's experiences, motivation, just perspective on whatever it is, the content, the script, or just life, to really either bring out what you were shooting for or what you didn't even know that you needed for that character. Right. You know, that's a really interesting way to take it.
And that's very good to be open-minded. A lot of people I've worked with, they're not the actors, but other people. And other artists, they're very rigid. Like, they're like, no, and I get it. You know, it's your way. You see it. It's your vision. It's your, you know, your art. But like, that's good that you have an open mind that you can do that. I'm the same way. I'm like, all right, you know what? I've been watching this edit. Maybe I missed something. Let me let, you know, 4 eyes are better than 2. Let me let this guy come in and look at it. And hey, I'll tell my fiance, what do you think about this? She's like, the music is this. She'll see things that I won't see, because we're so conditioned to seeing it that you're just programmed. So you're not going to see any errors or anything. So that's great.
Right.
That's awesome. I do the same thing.
Yeah. Well, we've been going for super long. Is there anything else on Rocky IV that y'all want to touch on? I'm sure that we've missed stuff, but we can go on and on and on.
We've hit everything for me.
So,
everything that I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Well, then we'll let you officially answer the question. So we're going to ask you, but is Rocky IV good?
Rocky IV is absolutely great.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's the greatest Rocky. To me, the greatest Rocky out of all of the Rockies. Besides one, I got to say 4 is the best.
Yeah.
There you go. You heard it here first, folks. Officially.
Yep.
On the But It's a Good podcast, Rocky IV is good. Now we like to do a little segment just for fun, and we'll be quick. We call it Every Movie Sucks, and that's because we say somebody hates the movie that you love because everybody hates everything these days.
Right.
So we like to go to Letterboxd and look up really, really bad reviews and read a couple. And I'd love to get you get your reaction.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Let me see.
We started this as just reading we would do good and bad reviews, and it got to the point where the bad reviews were just really funny, or gave us more like jumping off points to say I disagree. So now we just do
it's like Instagram reviews, and you go to a post and it's like the comments are the funniest thing. You got to read the comments.
Exactly.
The comments are probably funnier than the actual post.
Exactly.
Let me see. This one says, excuse my language, but this does have an F word in it. But this is actually a question, and maybe you could answer it. Yeah. This is a half star review. It says, okay, but what's the deal with that fucking robot?
I mean, I think the robot was there. Again, I think it served its purpose to kind of like be like funny, kind of like the Jetsons a little bit. Kind of had that vibe for me. But I thought it was more for the kid. It was more like Happy Birthday, Paulie, kind of something a little different. I don't think it was needed, but I think even like you guys watched the director's cut. Like, how did it feel like comparing the director's cut to the regular cut? Did you feel like the robot was significant?
I actually wasn't able to find the director's cut. I just know I was trying to see what the difference between the two cuts was, and it said that they took out the robot and they added some other stuff in.
Same. And the person that I was reading that from actually listed that as a con. They said pros and con, and they said that I think that the robot being taken out is actually like a negative thing.
Yeah, I agree.
But actually, that's something that we didn't touch much on is that, you know, in this film, Rocky's a dad and like has a kid. And
when he's like cheering with his buddies.
Oh yeah, I love
during
that,
the fight. That was
so. I've got a 2-year-old. I'm not sure if I said this, but I've got a 2-year-old. Will.
Oh, and, okay. Awesome. That's great, man.
Yeah, when my son comes to my shows, dude, like I don't care if no one else shows up. It's the greatest thing when he comes to my shows.
That's awesome.
And so at the end, when like he was like, "I just want to tell my kid I love you," I was like, "Man, that gets me every time."
Yeah.
But okay, Zach, you got one.
Yeah, this says, same movie as 2 and 3, but worse in pretty much every way. Worse montages, dumber situations. They were really running out of ideas at this point. Will, would you like to respond to that?
I think the montages were the best of the film, to be honest with you. I think that anybody who like goes to the gym, like I told you, like that was like it. That was like, all right, I'm working out to this. I'm playing this as I'm doing some pull-ups or doing a chest press. I'm listening to Bill Conti and Survivor. Yeah. And I mean, I love the montages. Were they a little long? Yeah, but I mean, it was an 80s movie. I think it was good for what it was.
That is true. I got one more, and that's cool. And then, Zach, you want to do more? You can.
Yeah, sure.
This says half star. This guy's name is Taco King 23. Oh, I forgot. We're not supposed to say this. Oh, whatever. This says, there was no plot. Everything's the same. It has nothing. When it ended, I was like, that's it, because it provided nothing. What do you say to that? I feel like it gives you something. For sure.
Well, every Rocky movie is him going the distance when he doesn't think he can, and it's always the same formula. Like a lot of people can't understand that it's the same formula every movie. It's he takes an ass whipping. Excuse my French. He doesn't think he can do it. He wins. He goes the distance. He proves everyone wrong. Everyone cheers. That's the formula for Rocky. So like if I get it, but like that's what it is. We all know that. Like it's being presented to us up front. It's not like it's like, oh, we're gonna paint it this way. It's what it is at face value.
It's interesting because there are a lot of negative reviews that call this like use formulaic as like a negative for the film. But if you really think about it, this film kind of breaks the formula because he beats Drago the first time he fights him.
That is true.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't get his ass kicked. Apollo gets his ass kicked. and then, you know, Rocky avenges him. So it sort of does break the formula a little bit. So it's an interesting critique that I've seen a lot. Here's one that's basically just an insult. It says, if you're wasting space in your brain on nostalgia for this, you shouldn't. And that's That's the end of the review.
That's just like your opinion, man. Well,
yeah, that's right.
Listen, I always tell people, I'm not a $100 bill. Not everyone's going to like you, right? And everyone's going to like what you put out.
Yeah.
Someone's going to critique it. Someone's going to hate it. Listen, for my film, people wrote such bad reviews. I mean, I had a guy from Movies and Mania named Adrian Smith who slaughtered Graves. He was like, what is this? Dude, I was like, all right, listen, he's still talking about it. So bad publicity, still good publicity. Still press.
Here you go.
That's true. We actually... I won't say any names because he's a dear friend of ours, and if he listens to this, then he knows who he is.
I'm so close to saying his name.
I know. So every year we do, at the end of the year, we do what we call the Golden Good Awards, and we kind of rank our movies, and, you know, we pick the best one, the most okay movie, and then the worst one. And our best movie of the year last year was Poor Things. I'm not sure if you've seen Poor Things.
No, I haven't seen it.
But it's crazy. It's wild, but it's weird, but it's right up our alley. Like, as we love really emotional but also weird movies, and we gave it the best movie of the year. And this guy, he's been on the podcast a few times, he's a good guy, but he hates it. I mean, hates that movie. And he commented on the post, and he's like, it's so strange to give a terrible movie the best movie of the year. And it's just like, look, man, okay.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. So, like, if someone's like, hey, man, your movie sucks, and it's like, don't watch it, I guess.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's very on brand for Every Movie Sucks, because somebody's going to hate it. Doesn't matter what
it is. Oh, yeah.
But there you go. Cool. So that's officially a wrap on Rocky IV. There it is. But it is good. It is very good.
It's very good.
And if you don't like the 80s, don't watch it. But if you love the 80s, jump right in. So moving on to the next segment. Like I said, we'll stitch our parts in there as we get closer to release date. But we like to give, as we said, you know, we're from the South. We call them shindigs. This is your shindig, man. Anything that you want to talk about, anything you want to promote, it can be about your upcoming film. It can be about whatever, the you know, Yankees signing Juan Soto. Doesn't matter. Anything that you want to talk about or promote, whatever you want to talk about, man. Floor is yours.
Oh, thank you. Just my new film, Oculus. It's going to be on Amazon Prime, April 15th, 2024. I have the brand new Enter the Oculus trailer that is set to debut sometime in the next 2 weeks. And that's pretty much it. You can catch me at LaSalleProductions.com. I'm on IMDb. If you Google search me at Wolfert LaSalle, I come right up. And you'll be able to see all of my pages, LinkedIn, links to everything. So that's pretty much it. And thank you guys for having me.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much for being on.
I do have a question. I know it's been an hour and a half, but we can spare 5 minutes. I got to ask you, man. So the influences for Into the Oculus, because I see some Matrix.
Yep.
I see some political thriller type stuff.
Besides the Matrix, what else do you see besides Matrix? So, is definitely Matrix.
Yeah. I've got something, but it's a really deep cut. I don't know. I'm going to like freak out if you actually get this reference. You said that you're a DC fan, and I'm a Batman nerd.
Yeah.
But I see, especially with the masks, I see Court of Owls. I don't know if you know what that is.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So I was like, I got some Court of Owls influence here, Illuminati type stuff. It looks super interesting, man.
Thank you. So yeah, those guys are called the suits. So the film, when you see the trailer, it's all over the place, and it's meant to be like that. The film is actually very grounded.
Okay.
It's a 2-hour film. It really is something completely different than what I've done in the past. It's a sci-fi adventure horror film all mixed into one. Definitely Matrix was a big influence for my character. I ended up shaving my head, shaving my beard. I never do that. My fiance lost her mind when she saw me come home. She's like, what are you doing? I was filming this movie throughout the summer. So it was about 90 degrees and I'm wearing all black, and I was sweating profusely. I had to, in between takes, like, wipe myself down. But definitely Matrix, definitely The Boys. I don't know if you guys are big fans of Homelander.
Okay.
Homelander. I actually have only seen lasers. One episode of that, but the I laser. Do know about The Boys. Yeah.
Yeah, the lasers, kind of like Cyclops, X-Men kind of vibe.
Yeah.
I took some of that. What else would I say? In the next trailer, you're really going to get to see what the plot is really about.
I feel
like a lot of people who ask me about it, like, well, there's military men. It kind of has a Transformers vibe. I'm like, well...
Okay.
You'll see what it's about. I said it's very grounded. But I will tell you that it's the afterlife. So the guys that you see waking up with the white eyes, they enter the afterlife and they're all dressed in suits.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then the reference is what you see, that the suits could correlate to if they become that in the world of the Oculus. The special effects and everything that I have this guy working on who's doing all my special effects, top tier. Like it's not going to look like an independent film when you see the film. Like you've seen the thumbnails, the quality.
Yeah.
I try to make this like very, very, very high quality. So I've been editing this for 6 months. I've literally been giving my weekends, my days, everything away for this, like giving up all like friends. Like I'm like, I can't go out. I got to edit this movie. So it definitely has a Matrix kind of vibe. I bought that big coat. I always loved the Matrix, but like, I always wanted to do a sci-fi film. I always felt like I've done Graves, the Helos. They were more like police films, action. Mm-hmm. This is action, but it's different in a way. Like we have spaceships. We have all these like mothership. You're going to see like a big mothership. I'll give you guys that. It's really the next trailer. The song is really good. I don't know if you guys are into like 12 Titans and Mitchell Broom. His music, that kind of trailer music. I always listen to that. Yeah. And to me, that's what I do. Like I'll get in my car and start listening to trailer music. My fiance is like, how many times are you going to listen to this song? I'm like, you don't understand. I'm feeling it. I'm seeing
the events happen. You're seeing
something. I'm seeing every beat of the hit. I'm like, all right, this is happening. Then he's doing this. Yeah. And then the beat hits. Then it's all action. And then it's, you know, I guess as a musician, you do the same thing. It's an art.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're on Spotify. You get like the curated playlists.
Yeah.
Mine are like, I have a couple different ones for different genres, but the first one that always pops up is like cinematic.
So like Hans Zimmer.
Hans Zimmer, for sure. And the first trailer, the music is very grand in scale. It felt like something that would be, you know, a trailer for a Christopher Nolan movie or something. You know what I mean? Like Inception or something like that. Yeah.
It feels very Star Wars-y too. I know, I've never watched the Star Wars movies. I know you guys are going to probably be like,
oh my God.
Never watched any of the Star Wars movies. So it's funny because on one of my posters, I had one of the guys, the graphic designer, he actually put one of the spaceships of a star, like, I don't know what it was. And everyone's like, dude, that's from Star Wars. I'm like, dude, I never seen Star Wars a day in my life. So I had to remove it because it was like outrage and like my cast members were like, that's from Star Wars. And I'm like, I didn't know that. So I had to tell the guy, take the ship out. I forgot where it was from, Rogue One. I don't know what it was.
But that's funny.
We have like six posters and they were freaking out. Like, dude, that's plagiarism. I'm like, dude, all right, relax. I didn't know.
Disney's going to come after you.
Yeah.
But no, that's awesome, man. Like, I think that's amazing. I love what you're doing.
Thank you, man.
And I love how you're doing it and why you're doing it too. I think it's super impressive and inspiring. And I hope and I imagine that this happens in your life, you know, in your circle and stuff, that it inspires other people to pick up a camera, pick up an instrument, pick up a pen, whatever it is, or a paintbrush, anything.
And listen, I'm very persistent. Like my fiance was like, literally like, you're out of your mind. Like I email Good Morning America. I email Fox, Good Day New York. I get in contact with all their producers and they're like, wait, well, we're not interested now, but we'll get back to you. So you know what I say to her? I say, like, all right, well, no, to me, no just means numerous opportunities. So I'm like, all right, well, I'll just try again. That's it.
Yeah.
I'm relentless in what I want to do. So she's like, what? She's like, what's wrong with you? I'm like,
well, that's all right. That's because there might be one day where it's like, oh, something falls apart. Oh, we need something. Oh, well, this is this guy who won't leave us alone.
Yeah, right. Literally. They're probably sick of seeing my name. They're like, Wolf of LaSalle. Who is this guy? What does he want? Listen, I just, you know what it is? You have to be utterly obsessed and you have to believe in what you're doing. And I think that only like the crazy people like us, like really believe we're going to do this. Like, who cares, right? What do you have to lose? I miss 100% of the shots I don't take. So if I take a shot and I take an action, then something may happen. So that's just how I think.
I had somebody tell me, he said, well, I can promise you that if you stop, you won't make it.
That's right. Yeah.
I don't know. That was really good.
That was big. I like that. Yeah. I like that.
Hey, take it, man.
He actually got it
from Ed Sheeran, believe it or not. This guy, he's a big talent buyer and like booking agent in Atlanta. And he was with Ed Sheeran one night and Ed Sheeran said something about that where he was like, If you stop, then you'll never get there. I think it was Ed Sheeran. Something like that. It's a good quote.
That's great. I love that.
So real quick, if you don't mind, we're going to take a shot of whiskey. You can drink some water. But
oh, perfect.
We can toast to you.
Let's do it.
We do this, like I said, in honor of our cat who passed away last year. Today is, I don't know if you like whiskey. We're whiskey drinkers.
No, I thought not. Well, yeah, it's cool. I don't drink, but yeah.
Okay. We barely do. We used to drink a lot more. That sounds bad, but we're 30. And so we're like, well, we'll have half a shot once a week and that's about it.
Yeah. That's how much I drink is half a shot when we record the podcast.
This is how much we drink each week. But just so, I mean, if anybody cares, because now we're putting this on like, you know, we're doing video podcasts. This is Jack Daniel's Single Barrel Select. And Will, we just want to say thanks, man.
Thank you, guys. Thank you guys for having me.
We use whiskey shots as a way to kind of put out some positivity. And so we just want to say keep doing what you're doing. Anybody who's listening, please go check out his films and be on the lookout for Into the Oculus. You said it was April 15th? Is that what you said?
Yep. April. Well, the Into the Oculus is the trailer. The movie's called Oculus. There is another, there is another movie called Oculus.
So.
There is.
I thought so.
And it's about a mirror and yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Whatever. Well, so this is to whiskey, but also to you, Will. Thank you so much for being on here.
Thank you for having me.
And to creating art for the sake of art. Yeah?
There you go.
Cheers. Thank
you. Cheers.
All right, here we go. Okay. I really wish I had that water.
We love it. We love whiskey.
So real quick, before we sign off, you can follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube at Bud Is A Good Podcast. You can follow us on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, at BIIG Podcast. You can email us at BIIGpodcast@gmail.com, BudIsAGoodPodcast@gmail.com, or BudIsItGood@gmail.com. I got all three. And Will, one last time, where can they find you?
www.lasalleproductions.com. That's my official website.
Awesome. Man, I hope you had a good time. We had an absolute blast.
Yeah, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you guys for having me. It was a pleasure. Yep.
All right. Well, until next time, guys. We'll be looking out for your next stuff.
Thank you, guys.
But Is It Good Podcast? Yeah.